Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 159 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is my vastly superior hostess, Aaron Paulette. Aaron, I am not worthy.
Why, thank you, Weird. So, I don't know if our listeners have noticed, but Pink Pistols has come out with not one, but two very spiffy enamel lapel pins. One in just the traditional triangle with the shooter in the isosceles stance, and then the other one that's based off our circular pouch where you got the triangle and then around it, Pink Pistols, Armed Queers, Don't Get Bashed. They are very, very nifty, and I am selling, well, I, as in Operation Blazing Sword and Pink Pistols, are selling them, and it's one for 15 or two for 25.
And I have not yet got a chance to buy them, but I am totally buying them, Aaron. I've just
That's where I was going with this. Why haven't you bought them, Weird?
I have had a very busy weekend, so I have every time I've seen it, don't worry, Aaron. The check is in the mail. No, they look really awesome. And they're big, too. They're not little tiny lapel pins. They're going to let the world know that you're fabulous.
Well, I mean, I should point out that they're 1 inch across, which honestly seems kind of small to me. But,
when I see lapel pins, I think like the little American flags that like senators wear.
Well, I mean, I wanted the detail to be clear, but I didn't want it to be huge, and I thought this was a nice touch.
Yeah, it's not a campaign button, which would be gaudy, but at the same time, it's not like the little American flag that senators wear, which is, I mean, if you don't look for it, you're not going to see it. These are going to let people know from a distance that you are fabulous and you support the Second Amendment and you support queer rights and armed queers don't get bashed. Hells yeah.
So that's how I'm doing. I released them, announced them, whatever. It was this weekend, and I've already sent out the first batch. So, you know, if you're hearing this, they've probably already arrived.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's me. I'm being awesome and fabulous. How are you doing, Weird?
I am doing better. I had an exhausting week and weekend. We are getting our house re-sided, which means that we had to we're doing the pre-game stuff, which means every window that we haven't replaced since we bought this house has now been replaced because the previous owners were unbelievable cheapskates when it came to housing. And so the windows sucked and they were awful. And so all of those windows are now gone. And then guys came in and blew new insulation in. And I will say, boring homeowner talk, but if you own a home or are thinking about owning a home, you can never go wrong with insulation. It is the RAM of a house. If you put new RAM in a computer, you may not necessarily be able to put your finger on what exactly it did, but boy, that computer's working a whole lot better. And the same thing with your house is it will just make everything just a whole lot nicer in your home with more insulation, both for hot summer weather and cold winter weather. And so, yeah, insulation. So it's just, I've been working and also it just so happened that, our refrigerator was dying. And because of all the shortages and all that, I just said to my wife, look, let's just buy a new refrigerator. Let's not wait for this thing to really go on the fritz and us to lose all of our food and be living off a takeout. And so we bought a new refrigerator. It also happened to arrive on the exact same week when one man was pulling out all our windows and a team of men were blowing cellulose into our walls. And so it's been a lot of juggling and a lot of stuff. And then furthermore, sometime this week, my wife did something to hink up her shoulder. And so she's in lot of pain and she's in a lot of pain and not sleeping well, which means that both she is charming to be around. Sorry, honey. and also needing a little bit of extra pampering. And so I have been on like triple kid detail. So that's
triple kid detail.
Just it feels like that much. I just don't feel like I'm sitting down at all, except like in the evenings. I'm just rubbing her back going, please go to sleep because I want to just be done with all this. I want a break. I'm done playing this game now.
You know, Weird, wouldn't you be more fulfilled if you had another child?
I might be, but probably not. No, I probably wouldn't be. I like having just the one. And thankfully, it's medically impossible.
Oh, we can fix that.
I mean, technically you can, but there is a chance that a vasectomy reversal it will fail, and I am banking on that, and I'm not letting someone cut open my scrotum a second time to try. Cause,
well, okay then. On that jolly note,
the Second Amendment podcast that talks about scrotums. God had a little bit of extra elbow skin, and you know what? It's not a whole lot of fun if it gets cut on.
You know, I'm probably an awful person for saying this, but speaking of scrotums, we've got news about the McCloskeys.
You know what, Aaron? That is a perfect segue, because I want to say in talking about this, in no way, shape, or form are we defenders of Mark and Patricia McCloskey for who they are. I must say what I know about them, I'm not a huge fan. Not a huge fan of them as people, but as far as their actions on whatever that day was in, I think it was last year. What is it? June 28th of last year. So almost a year ago. Almost a year ago. At the time of listening to this, it's about a year ago. Yeah, the bunch of protesters broke down the gate to their gated community, and they stepped out with guns. Him with, presumably, they've never said anything about it, but functional AR-15. And Patricia had a non-functional, I believe it was a Brico 380. And Patricia waved that non-functional piece of garbage around willy-nilly in ways that made me quite uncomfortable. And Mark just stood his ground and essentially was letting people know that they should move on. And as far as Mark goes, I support Mark and say, you know what, that is a correct thing. And furthermore, I would note that I am not a lawyer. I am not a self-defense expert, but I would say from my understanding of Minnesota's laws, I would say that because they had to
Minnesota, they weren't in Minnesota.
Oh, Missouri. Pardon me.
Yeah, pardon. They were in St. Louis.
Yes. Pardon me. But yes, but Missouri law, I believe Minnesota also has a castle doctrine, but according to that they have a castle doctrine, and this was a private street, and it was protected by the gate, and they had to break the gate. So that is considered breaking and entering. And so therefore, under the law, that is no different than if they had kicked down the front door of the house and entered into their living room. And technically speaking, I think Mark could have opened fired into the crowd, and he did not, which I would say is the very, very wise decision. He would have a defense to make if he had open fired into the crowd. He would still need to defend it, and I would rather not defend it. But he did that and didn't change the fact that the attorney general, who is running for higher office, I'm trying to remember what position she's running for. But she made an example of them and charged them with all sorts of crazy felonious crimes. We've talked about this at length, like the pistol that Patricia had was assembled incorrectly, intentionally by them, because supposedly they bring it into court and it is disabled and rendered non-firing for the security of the court, so that they can use it in self-defense cases. They can point a essentially disabled gun and have there be no risk of it being fired. The attorney general had it disassembled to determine that it was unable to fire it, and then reassembled it correctly and then fired it to make sure that it was a real and firing gun, which has been argued was tampering with evidence.
So all of that was prelude. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Weird. So now let's go to what's actually happened with the breaking news. And so the McCloskeys have pled guilty to lesser charges. And it doesn't sit well with me. It doesn't sit well with me for a variety of reasons, because first of all, they pled guilty, or maybe it was just Patricia who pled guilty to tampering with evidence, even though we've got evidence, we've got statements that the gun was reassembled by the crime team. She's pleading guilty to something she didn't do. And then he is pleading guilty to a lesser count. And I don't recall off the top of my head what that lesser count is. Do you have it handy?
Yes, he is pled guilty to fourth degree assault. And Patricia actually was according to this story, I didn't see actually the tampering of evidence. She pled guilty to misdemeanor harassment.
And the tampering with evidence was mentioned in Viva Frey.
Okay.
Or Fry. I don't quite know how you say his name.
Yeah, I think it's Frey, but yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. But it's in the show notes.
But here we go. No, it's in the linked article as well. Mm-hmm. Last year, a grand jury indicted Patricia McCloskey and her husband Mark on felony. No, I got that wrong. We'll just cut that because I went for tampering.
Yep.
So last year, a grand jury indicted Patricia and Mark on felony charges of unlawful use of a firearm, right? You know, pointing it at the protesters, and evidence tampering. I don't know how they could have indicted them on something they didn't do. Mm-hmm. But we've beaten that to death. So here are the things that bother me. First of all, the guns are going to be destroyed. And that's just pure virtue signaling. Mm-hmm. In fact, the McCloskey's lawyer wanted the gun to be donated to, I think it was to be raffled off or auctioned off or something like that for a charity. Mm-hmm. And the judge was like, no, it has to be destroyed. It's a bad gun. We're back to the whole Diodan thing that, oh, the gun was inherently evil. And I don't know how much value it is. It looks like an old school. I mean, it's clearly not an M16, but it sure looks like one. I don't know if it has any sort of historic provenance or anything like that. But no, it was engaged in something wrong and the gun must be punished. And we all know that's garbage. The second thing that bothers me, and this is also mentioned in Viva Frey or Fry, is that the Missouri governor had said that he was going to pardon them. So if you're going to be pardoned, and, well, they obviously have the money because they are two very successful lawyers, why didn't they fight this? Mm-hmm. The only thing that comes to mind is that there was maybe something else up the state's sleeve that they didn't want, that they, the McCloskeys, didn't want to come out because he's running for state senate, I believe.
No, federal.
Federal senate.
U.S. Senate,
okay.
Correct.
And yeah, I don't know how this is going to affect his election, because on the one hand, you've got someone who's pled guilty. So that's a very easy, well, he's guilty. He said so himself. Why are you going to elect a criminal to federal Congress? And then there's people like you and I who are going, you didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Why are you pleading guilty to this? Why are you rolling over? Why are you handing our opponents a victory? And so this entire thing just makes me really, really upset. Ugh.
Yeah, I concur. I mean, number one, whether or not, I mean, even we can argue about Mark's AR. I would argue it's probably fairly valuable just on its own, just because those retro ARs, I mean, Brownells is making a mint selling retro ARs. So a legitimate retro AR will probably fetch more money than whatever the Brownells ARs are going for. And then furthermore, the fact that it's got historical provenance, even Patricia's garbage pistol, like that's mm-hmm. probably, you know, In this market, you could probably sell it for $200, but
it's back, culturally relevant.
Yeah, back before there was a crazy gun rush, that's probably $75 in any pawn shop in America, and she's probably only getting 50 of those, and that gun would probably, I mean, look at George Zimmerman again. Not saying right or wrong. I found the George Zimmerman auction to be tasteless, and furthermore, whoever ended up taking possession of it, I question them quite a bit, because why would you be interested in that? George Zimmerman had a Kel-Tec, what was it, the P9 or whatever, 9mm single stack. It was not a great gun, not an expensive gun, not a high quality gun, but it sold for a ton of money because it was George Zimmerman's gun. And the same thing with this. Mark and Patricia McCloskey's gun, that AR, just because it is both a quality gun and it's retro, so it's got some desirable stuff. And it was the gun that was worn by the dude with the pink shirt. That would sell for a ton of money, and Patricia's gun would probably go for at least 5 to 10 times what it's actually worth in an auction. And with them saying that's going to charity, you know what? I have a hard time arguing with that. But now, again, it's just being destroyed. Again, that's saying that the guns have done something wrong and they need to be punished. And then furthermore, they're pleading guilty. They are saying that they did something wrong. Now, I can understand that this could be some long, drawn-out trial, and Mark needs to be working hard to run for Senate, since essentially he's going from never holding public office to U.S. Senate. That's a big jump. And and as a general rule, a jump that most people lose who attempt that. So he needs to swim against the tide for that. So I could see them doing this just to free up their time so that they don't have to be in and out of court and in and out of their lawyer's office and doing a lot of extra work. And furthermore, not have the I am facing felony charges and jail time, which is what the full charges were, could be a hindrance to the campaign. Furthermore, I think, you know, Viva Frey has a great concept that maybe there's something in discovery that they don't want coming out. Again, there's some skeletons in their closet. We've talked about some of the crappy stuff that they've done in the past. I'm not going to reiterate it because I didn't end up looking it up, so I don't want to misquote it either, but they're kind of jerks. And so,
yeah, we covered that pretty extensively when this first came out. It's like we said, they are horrible people. Mm-hmm. We can't find much fault with what they did, but they're still horrible people.
Mm-hmm. And so I could definitely see that Discovery might pull up some things that could be added in evidence that maybe weren't relative to the case, but could be detrimental to his campaign. Especially since I said in the last one where we talked about his campaign ad, I bring into question about his conservative tenets and his support for the issues that he claims to hold dear. And furthermore, him saying that he's a Second Amendment supporter, he's pleading guilty. He is saying he did something wrong. He may not say he did. I don't even know if they list what the full bill was. But I mean, the felony charges of unlawful use of a weapon and evidence tampering. So yeah. So they're saying they didn't do that. Good on them. But they are saying again that they are harassing and assaulting the crowd with their weapons. And so therefore saying anybody who does the same as them is at least as guilty as they are. And that's just not true. And that absolutely is offensive, and it bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel a little bit thrown under the bus. It doesn't affect me as much because I don't live in Missouri, but I worry now that any Missouri gun owner who is involved in a defensive firearm use where they don't end up shooting, they could be charged on something similar, because precedent has been set. It hasn't been set as a ruling, but still there is some degree of precedent here. And if we've got an overzealous DA, like Missouri obviously has, they can go, well, this worked once, let's try it again.
And of course, I mean, we all know especially as Second Amendment supporters. The U.S. versus Miller case always gets brought up for Second Amendment stuff. And Miller was dead at the time, and his attorney, given that there was nobody paying his bills, was not present at the time of that ruling. I mean, it really should have ended in a mistrial, because it's really one of the bad decisions out there. But mm-hmm. again, it's constantly being brought up and cited by the anti-gun people because, hey, it's a case that was ruled that said the Second Amendment didn't allow someone to own a gun, despite the fact that the case made no sense. He had a sawed-off shotgun, and they said it had no military use. Short-barreled shotguns were the first military firearms ever made. So, yeah, it's bad precedent. It is bad character. I didn't like the McCloskeys much before this. I like them less now.
Yeah.
Do you want to transition to somebody else who I don't like, Aaron?
Why, yes. Who else don't you like, Weird?
The police chief of, let's see, O'Fallon, Missouri, Philip Dupuis. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but yeah, he has resigned. And he has resigned because the law HB 85, which is the Second Amendment Preservation Act, essentially making Missouri a Second Amendment sanctuary state, was passed into law. And he has stated that he does not like the idea that it both requires police officers not to cooperate with federal authorities if they are doing actions that are against the Second Amendment, and furthermore also gets rid of qualified immunity for officers who are acting against the Second Amendment. And and I'll say right now, I have always been against qualified immunity. I dislike the fact that police officers can hide behind their department when they do actions that may break the law. I think that we would have a whole lot less problems. I think I am not a defund the police person, but I am someone who believes that we need a whole bunch of police reforms. And I think one of the things that would help the reform a lot is that if officers were held up to the same standards as we are. If I am caught carrying a firearm in a school zone, Oddball had a great line talking about how the various universities around Tennessee own like some public parks and things like that. If I am in a public park and a police officer finds out I'm carrying a firearm and they state this public park is owned by a school and therefore you're carrying in a school zone, well, how the hell was I supposed to know? That's not a school zone and all that. Doesn't matter. You don't have to know. Ignorance of the law is no excuse for breaking it. But meanwhile, if you are a police officer, it's not even, you don't even have to plead ignorance. You just have to say, I was following orders, which didn't work out so well for the guys of the Nuremberg trials.
Yeah, you've covered it really thoroughly. I don't have anything more to add to this. I have read his objections. Mm-hmm. And I found them wanting. I'm not even going to dignify them with reading them. This guy. Well, let me put you this way. This is not the first time this particular location, O'Fallon, I think, has replaced their police chief. He's like the second or third one they've replaced in about 2 years. So that tells me that there's something else going on, and I didn't have the time or honestly the interest to dig deep enough. But there was one police chief who was there for on the order of months and then left or resigned, I don't know. And then they had this, they replaced him, and now we've got this guy who's been, I think, there 18 months. And so, if they're having this high a turnover with their police chief, I think that there's something going on with that particular municipality that requires a closer look.
Mm-hmm. And I will just say one more line that essentially I really got from Chris Chang, who really changed my mind on this. I am definitely not someone who's in favor of the immigration sanctuary cities. I just see it as shirking the law and all that. But Chris Chang made a great point in that the Second Amendment is, I mean, the highest law in the land. It trumps everything. You have the right to keep and bear arms. And as a matter of fact, because the founding fathers stated you were endowed by your creator, somebody in Zimbabwe or somebody in Japan has just as much right to keep and bear arms as we do as Americans. They are stating that it is a power higher than even the government of the United States that has bestowed that right upon people. And I really do agree with that. Well, no matter what your belief in a higher power, I believe everyone does have a right to self-defense, and they have the right to all the tools available to them for self-defense, and the government shouldn't be limiting that access. But furthermore, if it's going to be, as he said, you know, if Joe Biden calls to round up all the AR-15s, no, we shouldn't be cooperating with that. And again, we have things like the ATF's, you know, arguments on pistol braces and bump stocks and all of that. I think there's a pretty good argument that that's illegal. And there should be no reason why local police should be like, yeah, we'll help you do that. So I support these sanctuaries, and I hope that they continue to spread. There's a whole bunch of, I've been following constitutional carry so much that I've lost track of how many of these sanctuary states and cities and counties that have shown up, but it's starting to get to be a non-trivial amount of the United States that is essentially mm-hmm. saying that, no, the Second Amendment is absolute here. I don't care what the feds say.
And well, if certain states can get away with immigration sanctuary cities, why can't other locations get away with this, especially when it's already in the Bill of Rights, as you said. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be a point of contention.
I agree.
And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting, especially over the next few years, because, well, gun control wasn't an issue in this election because, well, we had 2020 and the mass gun buy. But come 22 and the midterm elections, depending on how things shake out, gun control might be on the table again. And there's that. And then there's whether or not Chipman gets appointed. Hopefully not, but we still haven't heard anything. I think they're going to vote on it this week on Thursday.
I have heard that. I am waiting to see. I haven't really heard a whole lot of movement yeah. going on. So at the time of this recording, I'm unsure, but we shall see. Hopefully, again, if you haven't written your letters mm-hmm. or made your contacts, I mean, pick up the phone, call somebody, yeah. and let them know that he's a bad dude and he's not the right person. And again, if you're pro gun, it's an easy call to make. If the person is anti-gun that you're calling, again, this guy is a big money corporate lobbyist. He is not the type of person should be running government. This is big money going into politics. And if they have ever spoken out against such things or spoken out against Michael Bloomberg, that's a good angle to tar and feather Chipman.
Yeah. And, from what I understand, they were going to have a vote on it last week, and it got pushed back to this week, which could be good, could be bad. I can spin all sorts of ideas about it. Mm. But yeah, we've still got time, so bug your Congress critter. Although, honestly, by the time you hear it, it might be too late. But then again, they might push it another week. I don't know. But the point that I was making was we got the midterms coming up, and if Chipman gets elected, and dear God, if both he gets appointed and gun control is a big issue in the midterm elections, I'm just glad for this rise of sanctuary cities and counties. And do we have Second Amendment sanctuary states yet?
I mean, there's Missouri. I think that's statewide.
Ah, okay. I thought that was just a little more local. Great.
Yeah, I think Missouri might be the first statewide one. Again, I have not been following this as close as constitutional carry. But pivoting ever so slightly, I will say, continuing with people hostile to the Second Amendment and the midterm election, former Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe is vying for that position again. And this time he's teaming up with the Giffords anti-gun group to push his candidacy and share his anti-gun agenda. From 2014 to 2018, the governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia was Terry McAuliffe. Overall, he wasn't that anti-gun, especially when you compare him to current Virginia governor and suspected Ku Klux Klan member Ralph Northam. Under Governor McAuliffe, Attorney General Mark Herring revoked the concealed carry reciprocity from over half the recognized states, apparently as a punishment to gun owners. McAuliffe, at the urging of state Republicans, reversed that. Still, being a centrist on guns, I guess isn't good enough because Terry wants back into the governor's office, and this time he's using the Giffords anti-gun group as a springboard for his campaign.
It just drives me wild to see people who just are not willing to do the right thing for their constituents and for the families. Why? For a campaign contribution?
What right thing? I assume because this video is being produced by Giffords, it's gun control. I don't know how many campaign donations the NRA is giving out these days, given their recent bankruptcy, as well as the negative press from both the anti-gun media and pro-gun sources like this podcast. Still, how do you define the right thing? Governor Northam, like the Virginia Klansman before him, has put forth some gun control laws during his two terms. But Virginia is still a pro-gun state by my accounting. When you look at all the violent crime statistics, Virginia is actually one of the safest states in the Union. Now, it's right next to New Jersey in these statistics, so I ended up using two sources. Turns out, if you aren't in places like Trenton, Newark, and Camden, New Jersey is actually pretty quiet. I've actually spent quite a bit of time in Jersey, so I can attest to that. But the most telling data is the neighboring states. Of course, Virginia borders DC, which is the number one most violent place in America, and Maryland is fairly high on that list. I also need to note that Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire are at the very bottom of this list. And minus Vermont, who only recently started embracing gun control, those states are the most gun-friendly states in the country. Of course, Jersey's right there too, and it's very unfriendly to gun owners. But all this proves is that gun control isn't necessarily the right thing, and at best, gun control has zero relation to violent crime numbers.
People are worried today because of all the instances we have had. You think of Virginia Tech, you think of Virginia Beach, where folks were in their office in the municipal center.
Note that these events and most of the other spree shootings happen in gun-free zones with very lax security. So what are you saying? You should restrict guns more like they do in DC and Maryland? How's that working out for them? Maybe you should do something different, like the states who allow campus carry, and to date have not seen a single school shooting. And as hated as the NRA is, you never see a shooting at the annual meeting. In fact, violent crime often drops when the NRA is in town.
It is so sad. That's why I'm so impassioned about this issue. I always have been.
Except you were seen as a moderate governor when it came to gun control issues.
We should not be scared. And the only reason we can keep people from being scared if we do our job.
Is this that freedom from fear nonsense? People will always be scared. But note what Mr. McAuliffe is citing for violence. Not the day-to-day inner-city violence that disproportionately affects minorities, but the spree killers that are exceedingly rare. The Virginia Tech shooting and the Virginia Beach shooting were over a decade apart, and they disproportionately affect upper-middle-class white people. So if people are afraid, it's either because Mr. McAuliffe and the anti-gun lobby are exaggerating the risk of a shooting, or you're a demographic that the anti-gun politicians take for granted. Furthermore, Virginia is one of the most safe states in the Union per violent crime statistics.
We just want to keep our citizens safe. These are common sense gun protections.
Again, I've just been going over that there's no correlation of these laws and public safety. As they say, correlation does not mean causation. But you do need correlation to show causation. And there's no correlation.
Nobody should be offended. No hunter needs an assault weapon, needs a large capacity magazine.
Thank goodness the Second Amendment isn't about hunting. This is a bad faith argument. The Second Amendment is about defending yourself and your country from enemies, foreign and domestic. Ironically, the magazine limit some hunting laws have is to protect game stocks so they can be enjoyed by future generations. So your idea of supporting magazine bans in general is to protect the population of violent criminals, terrorists, and foreign invaders? I'd be fine if we wiped them out for future generations.
There is no reason why someone should be able to carry a gun into a state office building.
You mean like the office building where a killer killed 12 of his unarmed co-workers in Virginia Beach? Well, he was breaking the law when he did that, for all the good that law did. His co-workers were following the law, despite several of them being concerned that this disgruntled employee might retaliate violently, including one victim who expressed an interest in carrying her gun illegally because she was afraid of him. Unfortunately, she didn't act on this. Terry McAuliffe wants to expand this dynamic.
We have a real opportunity to take Virginia to the next level, just to keep people safe and to get these dangerous weapons off the street, out of the hands of people who should not have them.
Except it doesn't work like that. Just ask DC and Maryland, who are right next door.
That's all we're asking. And that's not too much to ask to keep our families safe.
Except it won't keep families safe. And the data shows this to be true. So you're asking people in actuality to give up their fundamental rights, as well as valuable property, for less safety. That's a bad trade, and it is too much to ask. I urge voters in Virginia to vote in favor of the Second Amendment this November. Those are your Edgegen talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
So, yeah, I don't know as much about Virginia politics as I probably should for purposes of this conversation. So, McAuliffe, is he running against Northam? Is Northam not available, not eligible for re-election? What?
I believe he is term limited out. He's definitely serving his second term, and I believe he is not running. I believe he can't run for a third term, but I actually didn't look that up either. But no, he's not. He can't run against Northam because they're of the same party, and they've already had a primary. And mm-hmm. I will say that Giffords gave a spot to all of the Democrats, or at least all the Democrats that were anti-gun in that primary. And the primary has since happened since that video was recorded, and McAuliffe stuffed him like a turkey. He got like 62% of the vote, and everybody else got, there was like three or four other people on the ticket, and they got bits and pieces of what was left. So it was quite a wide margin. So yeah,
this really does sound like Bloomberg's hand again. It's, hey, you like that gun control that Northam gave? Let's do more of that.
Mm-hmm. And it is very interesting, and it'll be interesting to see actually how this plays out, especially now, like you've said, that there has been this bipartisan gun buying that has going on. Mm-hmm. And again, McAuliffe is not really an anti-gun politician. I remembered his name when I saw the video. I'm like, oh, I know that name. I recognize him as an anti-gun politician. But when I was doing the research for the Fisk, I just started looking up his policy and realized, you know, he's actually fairly neutral on guns as far as his political ticket goes. Cause he definitely, it was under Mark Herring that they had Mark Herring is clearly anti-gun, where he pushed that insane loss of reciprocity for Virginia carry permit holders. And it was all discussed at the time when it happened as a means to get other states to pull their reciprocity for Virginia, because most reciprocities are mutual between the states. But it was McAuliffe that actually signed the bill into law that restored, I believe, and then some, the reciprocity for people that hold Virginia carry permits. So overall, he's really neutral. So I find it a very odd career move, especially in this day and age, for him suddenly to be the rah rah sis boom ba, let's ban guns.
Well, again, he's got to get that sweet, sweet Bloomberg money.
And that sweet Bloomberg money he's going to be getting.
Yep. And hey, rhetorical question time, Weird, because this is happening in the NRA's backyard, because the NRA is in Fairfax, Virginia. What are the NRA doing about this?
Oh, I would say nothing, but we shall see. I was actually very, very surprised because I told the NRA to stop calling, because I'm not going to give them money and I'm really not going to support them at all because honestly, all the corruption in the NRA is baked into the bylaws and there's no way we can excise all of the corruption out of the NRA's bylaws without completely killing the NRA on the table. So I just said, you know what? I'm done with the NRA. You guys don't need to call me anymore. But when they did call, they were calling to share all the information about David Chipman. And so I was surprised because I have a link in the show notes talking about the sheriff that resigned with a Reno May, he's a California Second Amendment advocate and really, really a cool guy. I really like his YouTube channel. But he was talking about earlier, he's like, hey, have you talked to somebody about David Chipman? Have you shared one of my videos about David Chipman? Congratulations. You've done more than the NRA has done. So yeah, we shall see. I will point out that Ralph Northam, who, may I go on in the, you know what? I'm going to put it in the show notes. Ralph Northam, or at least a group aligned with him, it might have been a PAC that actually funded this ad, had an ad with a truck that had the Republican he was running against, bumper sticker and an American flag and a Gadsden flag on it. And it was chasing down minority children. And that was the statement of the, if you vote for the Republican, you're going to be pushing for white supremacists killing minority kids. And it turned out that Ralph Northam, if he is not a member of the Ku Klux Klan, he is at least a strong sympathizer of it, because one does not dress up in such a get up and then put it in their yearbook without at least some level of admiration. And so that did not age well. But yeah, the NRA didn't even get behind the fact that this guy's an anti-gun and this guy has ties to the Klan and is possibly a racist definitely a racist and just a horrible person. They didn't do anything about that. And they didn't do anything about the midterm elections that gave him the power to push the gun control laws that he's pushed through. So, yeah, I don't have a whole lot of faith that the NRA is going to be pulling much weight on Terry McAuliffe.
That's why I said it was rhetorical. Mm-hmm.
But I like to talk.
I know. It's said that nice guys finish last. But how do guns get nice finishes? David's here to tell us all about it.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. In this segment, I'd like to talk about metal finishes. When choosing metal items that will be exposed to wear or the elements, whether lawn furniture, firearms, or decorative items, the finish chosen can have a considerable impact on longevity. Metal finishes come in a variety of categories with considerable variation in protective qualities, care requirements, and aesthetics. I'd like to review some of the more commonly encountered methods in this segment. One of the oldest methods of protecting metal is case hardening, also called surface hardening. It's more of a metal treatment than an actual finish. The iron or steel part is packed in fine carbon and baked at a high temperature for a specific time appropriate to the material. This causes the carbon to build up in the surface, creating a very hard skin, generally less than 2 millimeters deep, while maintaining a softer core. Case hardening has been used on everything from self-tapping screws to crankshafts. Color case hardening is a subcategory usually only found on firearms that adds an attractive color pattern in addition to protection. Since surface hardening is very thin, it can be worn away by continuous abrasion. However, due to that extreme hardness, it resists wear quite well. With color case hardening, the pattern can fade over time, but the hardness will remain. Another long-used finish is bluing, also called rust bluing. As the name implies, bluing is a controlled form of rust. Various processes have been used, but they generally involve allowing the surface to rust, then converting the surface of the metal to black oxide or magnetite. Once this conversion is complete, the loose oxide is carded or scrubbed off, and, if necessary, the process is repeated until the depth of color desired is achieved. While bluing can provide good rust protection, it has relatively little wear resistance and can scratch through fairly easily. Bluing is mostly used as a traditional firearm finish, but can also be found on decorative items. Nickel and chrome plating have been used for many years as wear-resistant corrosion-protective coatings on both metals and other materials, such as plastic. These finishes are generally applied through either a chemical or electrolysis process. Marine equipment or other items likely to encounter a corrosive environment are frequently chrome-plated to prolong their usable life. This finish may also be applied for purely decorative purposes. If improperly done, nickel and chrome plating can form bubbles where the chrome or nickel does not adhere to the underlying material, which often leads to peeling of the finish. Another finish primarily used for firearms and other military equipment is parkerizing. Originally patented in the 1860s, parkerizing is a very corrosion and wear-resistant finish, but is not commonly found on decorative items. In this process, the parts are placed in a heated phosphoric acid solution along with zinc, manganese, or iron. After a specific time at the appropriate temperature, this process results in a medium to dark gray textured finish. Stoving is a traditional metal finish most commonly found on grills and other items likely to be exposed to high heat, hence the name. This finish was also used on British and Commonwealth military arms, including the Lee Enfield family of rifles. Stoving is a type of baked-on enamel paint and provides an extremely tough corrosion and wear-resistant finish. Traditionally only found in satin or matte black, modern high-temperature stoving paints come in a wide variety of colors. The various epoxy-based coatings such as Duracoat, Cerakote, and Norels are spiritual descendants of stoving and, if anything, often provide an even tougher finish. Powder coating, though applied dry, can also be considered part of this category. Water transfer printing, also known as hydro-dipping, is a decorative coating process used on everything from car parts to personal protective equipment. Unlike most of the other finishes or coatings mentioned, hydro-dipping is commonly applied in a pattern, such as camouflage, and can be applied to nearly any material. While attractive, hydro-dip finishes are mostly applied over a more weather-resistant finish if the item is to be exposed to the elements. Like bluing, hydro-dipping is not usually very wear-resistant, and many types can be removed simply by scrubbing with a mild abrasive. While some of the finishes I've mentioned can only be applied to specific surfaces, others can be used on a variety of both ferrous and non-ferrous metals, and even other materials such as plastic. Anodizing, while applicable to a variety of metals, is generally associated with aluminum, or aluminium for our friends across the pond, these days. As with stoving and its related processes, anodizing is available in a rainbow of colors. The greatest weakness of anodized aluminum is mercury, as even a relatively small amount can practically dissolve an aluminum object by preventing the formation of a protective oxide layer. Other than that, an anodized finish can be extremely wear and corrosion resistant. However, as with bluing, anodizing can be scratched fairly easily. When choosing a finish, or restoring an old or worn finish, consider the application and care requirements. Some of these finishes can be applied by the hobbyist with a moderate investment in materials and equipment. Others are best left to the professional. Care of these finishes is frequently nothing more than wiping the object down with a dry, oiled, or solvent-dampened cloth as appropriate. Avoid letting the items remain wet or exposed to chemicals any longer than necessary, and they can maintain their integrity for a very long time.
Thank you for the naughty pictures. I'm laughing at my own joke.
So are we recording or are we just talking while we wait?
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. I'm also a contributor on the Blue Collar Prepping blog, which can be found at bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I am David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
I gotta say, Aaron, I love color case hardening. How about you?
Nope.
Are you not familiar with it?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I listened to the segment, and now I can't remember what it was. Oh, I see it. Well, I followed the link. Okay. All right.
Aaron is looking at the color case hardening page on Turnbull Restoration, and Doug Turnbull is a frigging wizard when it comes to making classic guns and modern guns look absolutely amazing.
Okay, so you could have just said the ones that look sort of rainbowy, oil spilly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are really nice. I like that.
Yeah, I that's one of those finishes that I have a super duper soft spot for. And someday I will have a showpiece 1911 in my collection that has both color case hardening controls and a Damascus slide, because I love me some Damascus, and I love color case hardening. And these Turnbull guns are amazing. And David points out the fact that the coloring can wear off from use, and probably from like the oils in your hand and that sort of stuff.
So it'd be a safe queen.
Yes. Well, except for the Turnbull guns and most of the modern guns, Carr is also doing a bunch of color case hardening for their various brands. Like you can get a color case hardened Desert Eagle now, and they color case harden the guns, and then they put a polymer clear coat on it. And so it is protected quite well. And so therefore you would have to wear through the protective coating and then wear into the color case hardening.
Oh, so it's just like the coat of clear nail polish right after you've had, the color applied.
I was unaware of that because my nails just look horrible. But yes, that makes perfect sense as a protective layer. And so so modern color case hardened guns, even the ones that are still done. I mean, I believe there's some techniques that mimic it, but aren't actually doing the actual hot box with urea and horse hooves and things. It's very archaic, but there are ways to mimic it. But even the ones that aren't mimicking it, like Turnbull Restoration, they then put a coating over the top, so it actually will stand up to day-to-day use. You may eventually wear into it, but not any more than, say, a standard issue blued firearm.
I'm just trying to envision that 1911 you described with the case hardened lower and the Damascus slide, and I don't know. I feel like that would clash somehow. Do you have a picture?
So no, you misheard me. It would be, I don't have a picture because I don't think anybody's done it, but I'll even go a step further. So the slide will be Damascus. Specifically the raindrop Damascus, so the kind of concentric ovals Damascus. That's one of my favorite Damascus patterns. And then the frame would actually be like a satin stainless. And then so it would be the slide stop, the safety, and the beaver tail, and maybe the hammer. I'm not 100% sure on my feelings on the hammer. All of those controls would be color case hardened. Actually, I'd probably color case harden the trigger as well. A color case hardened trigger would look really nice. And so all of those controls would be color case hardened. And then the stocks would be burl wood. So again, that kind of raindroppy pattern.
Maybe. I don't know. I'd have to see for myself.
You don't have to know, because that's what I want. And Weirdbeard, he's got strange tastes.
Yes, he does.
And also before we get off of this note, I want to just to geek out that I am also madly fond of Parkerizing. I really, really think it's a workhorse coating, and it's designed to generally be, it's fairly inexpensive, but boy, I really like the look of it. Like all of these, like especially like military guns that are Parkerized. Oh, they just got that nice, they almost look velvety. And then furthermore, that kind of velvety stuff, the Parkerizing has pores in it. And actually, I believe it protects the gun not through the coating itself, but through the fact that it can absorb oil. And specifically, if you have a Parkerized gun that's been in Cosmoline or a similar storage grease, that stuff will soak into every little pore. And then even after you clean it, you're not getting it out of the nooks and crannies. And so therefore, where there's some metal, it's protected from any sort of corrosion or water.
It's kind of like the bed liner for guns.
It does have that rhino liner kind of look to it, and all that. It's just I love a good Parkerized gun. And I will say when I when I when I gave Wally my father's old 22 to destroy, when he gave it back to me, he had parkerized it. And I'm trying to remember if he blew it first and then parkerized it. I forget which one went first, but it is stunning, that combination of parkerizing and blue, because it is jet black and just, it looks like a black velvet glove. It is amazing. So yeah, that is a texture that I like, and since it's thicker than most things, it also tends to wear very, very well. So closing out the show, I was contacted by Paloma Campana, and she was telling me about essentially a new book that she has written. She calls it a white paper. It's a book. I will let her explain it more in depth. I am pleased to welcome back to the Assorted Calibers podcast, Paloma Campana. How you doing, Paloma? You are, of course, an attorney and a supporter of the Second Amendment causes.
I am. Yes, thank you, Weird Beard, for hosting me again. Great when I can reach out to someone with that same passion for civil rights and get a quick response. You were fast off the trigger last evening when I sent you an email. So it's the topic of the day, right? It's what everybody's looking for more information about, and that is January 6th.
Yeah, let's talk about this. You have written, I mean, you're calling this a white paper, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm calling it a white paper so that you know what I'm doing is the analysis, is the deep dive, is the, okay, a reporter says this, but what's the source? But it is 110 pages long, 4 appendices, more than 350 footnotes, 35,000 words. So, you know, it's classic Paloma. I go off to do like one little bit of research, and 3 months later, it's, oh, I've got a book. It's time to share what I'm looking at, everybody.
Yeah, and this is called Events of January 6th, What Impact the Second Amendment Movement, The Activist's Workbook. So tell us about this.
Sure. So this is a full-size 8.5 by 11. It is a reference book that you'll be going back to again and again concerning January 6th. And it's also an ability for you to turn to these appendices, sort of 1 through 4, and say, I want to start doing something about this. I'm tired of simply complaining. Let me get to the fill in the blank letters to legislators to oppose domestic terrorist legislation. Let me get to the call script with some coaching, you know, in the book on how to make effective phone calls to legislators. And Appendix 4 is the letter to the FBI with the required government form to say, hey, I want to know what's in my file.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. I mean, the January 6th was a very controversial day. And so what were some of your discoveries?
You know, the lead discovery here is a great disappointment. It is that the United States Department of Justice is simply rigging a narrative. I tend to be hypercritical of executive branch agencies, looking at the policies, looking at the specific people in leadership roles, you know, looking at how they go about their investigations. This time, I'm an attorney looking at attorneys saying, wow, have you sunk to new lows? They're simply throwing around insults, smears, irrelevant claims that have very little to do with, did John Smith enter the United States Capitol building on January 6, 2021, without permission to do so? And if he did, what did he do after he breached the plane of the Capitol? So we've got hundreds of pages of documents crafted by the FBI and the DOJ, now against more than 400 different criminal defendants. And there's very little allegation that is actually admissible in a court of law.
So first up, let's dive down. Do you believe that the January 6th events were an insurrection?
No.
And what would lead you to say that?
Don't you love how it's like, no, one word answer, you know? Normally I have so much to say about things, but when something is clearly a yes or a no, that's simply, you know, where I tend to leave it. Was there criminal activity that occurred? Probably yes, mm-hmm. But we're America. There is such a thing as reasonable doubt. Prosecutors do have to make their case. The investigatory agencies do need to set forth their proof. and defendants have an opportunity to defend themselves. So, I mean, let's be clear, right, that we're still in the United States of America. And even though the media wants to turn this into a circus, even though the DOJ is absolutely running amok, the one hero who I can find in all of this is one of the Washington, D.C. District Court judges, Judge Mehta, M-E-H-T-A. Google him if you're not familiar with him. I wasn't. He seems to finally be bringing some sanity to the situation of actually saying to the DOJ, where's your proof? Well, guess what? They're having to admit that they don't have proof for a number of the allegations that they have made. And so some of these cases now, I think we will start to see some dismissals of charges, indeed some dismissals of entire cases, because they were brought in such a poor way.
One of the questions I was actually leading to, and something that I you've clearly done a lot more research than I have on this, were there firearms? Were the protesters armed?
No. So here's my backup for that comment. This is not just my opinion. In writing this book, I essentially went down the rabbit hole for about 4 solid months. So you've got more than 400 hours worth of research logged into this book. So I've been through the paperwork, if you will, that the DOJ has been filing and that various defense attorneys have been filing. I sat through several times over, God bless C-SPAN, the congressional hearings conducted. And in particular, I focus on two of the witnesses from the FBI, both the director and one of the assistant directors. The testimony from them, no firearms. The charges by DOJ, no firearms. Media even wandering my way through the media circus, no firearm allegations even in the media. So can we be clear that January 6th was not an insurrection, was not a terrorist attack, was not a Second Amendment movement event? We've got to get at least that far. Then we can back up and say, okay, so what are the criminal charges? We've got some breaking and entry. We've got some damage of property. You know, we can kind of go through the list. And because they are federal charges, they are more serious, right? The fines are bigger. Some of these defendants are facing up to $850,000 in monetary fines. So, you know, people are going to have to put their pound of flesh on the table and take ownership. And, you know, they will be charged, they will be convicted, there will be some sentencing. But, you know, let's be clear that it was a criminal event. It was not an insurrection. And I don't see where the aim of any person was to bring an end to the United States government.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big sticking point. And of course, I will further back you up and point out that this is the District of Columbia. It is still not a gun-friendly area. It is still not a gun-friendly district.
No, it's not. But, you know, here's one of the most bizarre aspects to the charges that have been brought by the DOJ. When you start going through the criminal complaints, when you start going through the indictments, the DOJ's own papers, which lay out all kinds of social media posts, text messages, emails, and so forth, they are pleading out allegations that people who communicated with each other in advance of January 6th specifically said to each other, you can't have firearms at the Capitol. So people were abiding by the law. People were familiar with the law and how strict it is in Washington, D.C. And guess what? They complied.
Yeah. And that's saying, again, there were no firearms charges whatsoever. And this is simply on the just having a pistol on you, just having, I mean, there's many.
No, there's not even any charges of that. There's no firearms charges or recoveries at all on the Capitol grounds on January 6th in any format whatsoever.
Yeah, these are not. This is not because these charges got swept under the rug under a technicality.
Correct. Like,
these are
no. I went looking for them. Trust me, I went looking for them specifically. And as I say, the DOJ's own paperwork in their allegations against defendants is essentially piles of exculpatory information where persons involved said, nope, we're not bringing firearms to D.C. Mm-hmm. And they didn't.
So what are you concerned? What is the bigger elephant in the room, in your opinion, of all of this misinformation and narrative building?
Right. Domestic terrorist legislation. So I tend to have an interesting reaction to chaos that is a little different than most people. Most people, there's enough chaos, they start running around too. Me, the more chaotic something gets, the more quiet I get, the more still I get, because I want to look through the smoke, I want to look through the mirrors, and I want to see who else is not running. And this one has some real surprises, because who else is not running are several Republicans on the Hill, including Senator Lindsey Graham and Senator Marco Rubio, where I am looking at Republican senators who want to, and I'm quoting Lindsey Graham on this, plush up the executive branch funding and otherwise pass legislation to create a federal crime of domestic terrorism that would bring all of the terms and provisions of the Patriot Act to bear against Americans on U.S. soil.
I mean, that is crazy. And I think I'm 100% with you on that. And I will urge various people that might see certain groups as a threat and certain groups as something that needs to be regulated, whether that be groups like the Oath Keepers, the people who are with QAnon, groups like BLM and groups like Antifa. They're all people that yell at these groups being domestic terrorist organizations, mm-hmm. depending on your views on how things should go about.
And yes.
These laws can be used against all of us.
And that's the critical point is, and I do not only make that point in the book, but I use examples from all political persuasions, including the Socialist Workers of America. This is an issue of the government versus the people. This is not a question of left or right. If domestic terrorist legislation goes through and you see the federal government, specifically the president through the Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary of State, starting to declare organizations, 501c3s, as domestic terrorist organizations and seizing their assets. Let's just start with that one aspect of the law. Groups will be bankrupt before they can even hire an attorney. The way that the DTO would work, if it's the equivalent of the foreign terrorist organization mechanisms that are in place and have been running now already for 20 plus years, is that a declaration is made and it gets published in the Congressional Register. Little sentence goes by. Really, how many of us are sitting around reading the Congressional Register? Even me. Okay, seriously? Even me? I'm not that wonky. So a sentence goes by. If you don't respond within so many days, then the Secretary of the Treasury is permitted to be seizing your assets, to be interrupting basic bank functions like a credit card charge or a check that you write to keep the lights on. Smaller organizations don't stand a chance. If they get put on the list, that's it. They will be out of business. There will be no assets. So, you know, I'm using that as my most simple example. Because the far end, and I don't mean far right or far left, the far end of what the government could then do against Americans includes things that they have done to enemy combatants and detainees who we have been calling foreigners for 20 years, saying it was okay. Well, now we're talking about doing that to American citizens on U.S. soils in U.S. prisons.
Yeah. So again, your book, Events of January 6th, I've got links to it in the show notes. You can pick up a copy of your own. And for those that even without a purchase, I'll just say I'm with you, Paloma. We should keep our ear to the ground and make sure that these expansions that will harm all of our rights, all the from the First all the way to the 10th Amendment rights, we need to be cautious of it.
We absolutely do. And so that's how I came up with sort of my website name, which is 2ampatriot.com. For those of us who lie awake worrying about civil rights.
Oh, I mean, that's awesome. And again, links to that will be in the show notes. Polona Kapana, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Weird Beard. And thank you to everyone who tunes in and who still really cares with a passionate heart for civil rights in America.
Weird, what did you say her name was again?
Polona Kapana.
Polona?
I know. I don't know why my tongue was stumbling over it that morning. I feel bad. I could have been dishonest and just said it over and over again and looped it into the track, but I decided against that.
It's like the first time, it's like, did I hear it? And then about 30 seconds later, you said it again. And then at the end, I must say, Ms. Kapana has a large amount of grace because she just let it slide. And if you had mispronounced my name, no, I would have stopped you right then and there. No, say my name properly. So my hat's off to you, Ms. Kapana, for putting up with my co-host.
My apologies. I just
butchered your name.
I had a little too much tongue in my head that day for proper speech. Thankfully, I let other people bring the smarts. And furthermore, her generosity also extends further that you can follow the show notes to her page where she's got the publications. She's got a whole bunch of publications. And if you want to read this white paper, but literally it's like 150 pages long, it's a whole book, the events of January 6th, it's there along with several other publications. You can enter in the code BEARD and you will get 10% off your order.
Now, Weird, is this order only for her white paper?
No, I believe it's for everything on the website, and it is through Independence Day.
It's site wide. Ooh.
So yeah, thank you again for that generosity, Polona.
Yes.
And I got to say, I am really glad this is out there. Much like the McCloskeys, I am not going to necessarily defend the actions of the people done on January 6th. And I'm not going to say I agree or disagree with what they were protesting. But I will say that I am very, very disgusted with how the quote unquote facts of the case have been presented. And I will note that after Polona and I sat down, President Biden was in Switzerland, and it might have been at the time that we were talking. I don't know exactly when he said it, but after I had finished recording with her and I was listening to the news, I had heard that President Biden had mentioned to reporters that the protesters on January 6th had murdered Officer Brian Sicknick. And this is just a colossal lie, because Brian Sicknick was a DC police officer who was at the riot. And it has been well documented that after the riot was over, he went back to the precinct. He did some paperwork and then was not feeling well and collapsed. And it turned out that he had had, I've actually seen in some of the news stories, strokes. And so he might have had multiple strokes, but he ended up dying of a stroke. And first it was said that he was beaten with a fire extinguisher, which is clearly not true, because he would have been both dead there and blunt trauma would be on his death certificate, which is not true. And then furthermore, I've heard some people say that because he ended up getting sprayed with bear spray on that might have induced a stroke, of which point I would point out that police officers need to get sprayed with OC spray to be certified as police officers, and just as a general rule to carry OC spray, because anybody who has sprayed OC spray knows that you don't just spray your attacker, you spray everyone, including yourself. And and so no officer who would have a fatal reaction to OC spray should have a badge, because part of their daily duties could mean that they're going to be exposed to this and therefore get killed. And so, yeah, it's just a big lie, and it's still continuing. And that's very disgusting.
Again, I feel like I should have something intelligent to say here, but I don't. Polona has said all the smart things. She sucked up all the smartness in the room. Nothing left.
She's wicked smart, as we say in New England. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels. And again, you heard some segments on that on David's track. Love it. And the ACP film tracks and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
So you can get more from me at all the usual places, including Licking Rhythmically and Blue Collar Prepping. And if you want to know how to buy those wonderful pink pistol pins that I mentioned before, why, you can go to my public figure page on Facebook or my regular person page, or you can look up Pink Pistol Announcements, which is where I announce all the things about pink pistols without giving away the secrets of the group. And we will accept PayPal and Venmo and Cash App, and I feel like there's another, but I'm drawing a complete blank.
Bitcoin. Do you do Bitcoin?
We do not do cryptocurrency. I'm at that age right now where setting up a crypto wallet is newfangled, and therefore it's just like, it's frustrating. I don't understand it. I don't want to do it. So yes, that's the point where Aaron got old. Like that crypto, that newfangled thing. I don't want to do that.
We, if you've been listening to us from the very, very beginning, when Savage1R was a regular contributor, and he even talked about how to set up a crypto wallet, and I'm like, still don't know how to do it.
That makes me feel better. Because, yeah, you talked about it. It's just, I don't feel comfortable. I don't want to. Zelle. That's the last one. Which someone tried and it didn't work. So it might not work. But, hey, you know, give it a shot. If not, we got others.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
I've got really cool pins. And he doesn't. Our coolness, our fabulousness, our fashion forwardness, our accessorization, all of this is assorted in a good way for me and a bad way for him. And so is our podcast. Good night, darlings, and stay fabulous.
Ha, but what you don't know, Miss Paulette, is I have a thing called money, and that can fix that, and I can get those points. Good night, everybody.